PG motherfucking Holyfield.
Damn right.
Yeah. What's going on, man?
Jack, son of a bitch, Megan.
I prefer dickhead, actually. I don't know if I'm going to use that. I don't know if that's going to be the intro to your interview.
That's funny.
But it might be. This is not your children's interview.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm the man with the damn you Holyfield meme, so.
That's true.
Well, what do you know? It's you again.
I mean, of course, you're best known around this podcast novel game for Murder at Avedon Hill, which was, just had lots. Actually, it's just famous for many, many different things. But I would say it's probably a PG-13 rated, at least. I mean, it's
or infamous.
Yeah, well, yes, it's got, there are some things that are infamous about the story as well. You certainly are hold a few podcasting records, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, Evo dubbed it as the patio book that never ends, even though it did end eventually. We had the two breaks, hiatuses, just for personal things, but it was a long production when you're doing the whole full cast audio and moving to a different house at one point and just different things going on. So I'd say, yeah, we had people sending death threats at one point, I think.
Ironically, I guess. But no, that's...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but... All right, well, let's throw some numbers at the fine folks listening. So the from start to finish, what was the first date and the end date for Murder at Avedon Hill?
Yes, it ran from May 2007 until May 2009. There were 42 episodes, about 24 hours of audio, and each episode, especially probably the second half when I went, I became a production whore after a while, and each episode took anywhere from 20 to 30 hours of production to do for, a half hour, 40 minute episode, so right. It got crazy.
Yeah, and how many voice actors did you have total? I mean, you had a pretty big voice cast, I'd say.
At final count, and that this includes, there was, during the climax of the novel, there is some voices that, appear that they're not real characters, but it's sort of a chorus of voices that represent something, and so I had people reciting the same few lines, and I would mix them in together so it sounded like a chorus of voices. With them, ended up having I think 52 or 53 voices. So yeah, lots of voices.
Wow. Yeah. It was like the Ten Commandments, really. You got like a
I mean, it's funny because you think epic fantasy, which this really isn't. I mean, it's a fantasy setting, and I've got the plans for the big epic storyline of four or five books and a war that's going on and all this stuff. But this is a murder mystery that takes place in a single town, and it just so happens that many of the townspeople that are met have a purpose in the book. So there's a bunch of storylines and plot threads that are going on, so we've got all these characters that I did get voices for. So
and I actually, you and I have talked about this before, but we can talk about it on an actual podcast interview now. And I don't mean that this could be misconstrued as a criticism, but it's not. But I always thought that you're right. I mean, it's not like there's this epic war, you know, a battle of five armies going on the whole time. It actually reminded me of more of like a D&D campaign. I'm sure you've heard that before too, but I think it had that feel because that's kind of how a role-playing game campaign, they often go that way, where you're kind of trying to figure stuff out. You're going through the module and trying to figure stuff out. So it had that feel. But again, I don't mean that as a criticism or anything.
No, and I don't take it as such because you hear that and when people are talking about when gamers write their first novel or they, you know, they're trying to adapt something into fiction and, you know, people are like, well, you know, you can't do that. You know, you can't have a Dungeons and Dragons campaign as a novel because it just, you know, you can tell and it doesn't work. But I don't have I've had people say that about Murdered Abaddon Hill, but they don't, it's never come across as a negative criticism. You know, it's like, wow, this really feels like I'm, you know, going through a gaming session and, you know, it sounds cool. And, you know, it started out as a module that I was doing with some people for Neverwinter Nights, which was a computer game that, you know, was the first real computer game, Dungeons, D&D related computer game where creators could create content that players could play through. We were creating a tournament module for people to play through where it would be, again, the plot of the book being that there's been a murder in this town and, you know, you're there to try to discover who killed this woman. But there's also these other plot threads that are going on and mysteries that become apparent after you start investigating. And with the tournament module, we were actually going to have, or I was going to have three different possible killers, and depending on, you know, it would be random so that different groups could go through this and they wouldn't know right up front if someone told them, oh, it's so-and-so that did this. You know, it could be a couple other people depending on, you know, randomly who was chosen. And there'd be different pieces of evidence that would come out or different conversation trees that would open up, you know, based on who the killer actually was. So when that sort of fell through, just because of real life and people not being able to build what it takes to do one of these things, I had especially the dialogue trees of all these characters in the town, all these NPCs that people would meet, and you know, I pretty much had the book written as far as the dialogue because I had all this stuff already done in spreadsheets. So it was a pretty easy decision to take this and say, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, try to write a novel out of this.
Irish drinking songs, Scottish bagpipes, totally trad, jigs and reels, Celtic rock. If it's independent Celtic music, you can find it on Mark Gunn's Irish and Celtic Music Podcast at CelticMusicPodcast.com.
You know, that absolutely makes sense. But now, all right, well, that's, and of course, I don't want, well, for your sake and for the listener's sake, I don't want this to be just a carbon copy of the other 4,000 interviews you're doing right now. And actually, we will get to the reason why you're doing 4,000 podcast interviews right now. But I will ask, which the same question that every other fucking interviewer is going to ask you, but, you know, whatever. Hang on, let me read from my interview sheet. Hang on a second. No, I'm just kidding. So what I was going to ask is, were you influenced? Do you think you were influenced more by the gaming type of thing, or were you influenced by some favorite authors when you took it upon yourself to make this as a novel? Was it more of a gaming thing, or was it, you know, the fantasy books that you've read?
A combination of things. The setting itself, the land of Cairn, where, you know, pretty much I write all my fiction, that's been my gaming setting. If I was, you know, the gaming master, dungeon master, what have you, that was my setting, has been my setting for the last 20 years since I was in college. And so you know, the richness of the setting that everybody comments on is a direct impact, you know, was directly impacted by the fact that I've been, you know, working on this setting and fleshing out the, you know, the magic system and the religion and the politics for you know, 20 years. So in that respect, it definitely came out of gaming, the desire to continue writing or continue creating, but in fiction instead of, you know, in gaming terms. But as far as my writing influences, probably, you know, a couple writers that I really have patterned myself after as far as how they write. Catherine Kurtz, who wrote the Dorini fantasy series. She writes, she also wrote the Adept novels with another author. The way she handles magic in her works, in her worlds, I've always loved. Magic has never been the focus. You know, Karen is sort of a low magic setting, if you look at it that way. There's not, you know, only a very low percentage of people have any sort of abilities that you would, you know, consider magical or supernatural. And I sort of took that from the way that she handles her setting and her writing. And then Stephen R. Donaldson, the Covenant series and his science fiction series, the Gap series, I really you know, they're probably my favorite authors as far as how I try to write. And even more, as I'm a big movie buff, so, and TV watcher too. So, I mean, there's elements in my writing that, you know, movie The Name of the Rose, that people usually say, oh, this sort of feels like The Name of the Rose when they're listening to Murder at Avedon Hill. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's one of my favorite movies. And, you know, Sean Connery in that movie, that you can see some of that in Aramis, you know, no doubt. And then I was just watching the other day, I was watching Twin Peaks, and I'm like, you know, Avedon Hill is pretty much a Twin Peaks type setting in, you know, just a fantasy world where there's something strange going on with everybody in this town, and it's just a matter of trying to figure out how it fits into, you know, the overall plot of this woman that's been killed.
Well, so you're going to get David Lynch to do the film version?
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
We'd all be after, you know, we'd all watch it and afterwards be like, I don't know what just happened.
I don't know what just happened. There's a guy that's like has a gas mask on and
yeah. How awesome.
There's a midget walking around speaking backwards. I don't know what's going on.
Right. Dennis Hopper as Aramis Cragan. Now that would be that would be something else. Or I guess he would choose Kyle MacLachlan. Well, that would probably be his choice, right?
Yeah.
You are listening to Jack Mason's Deadpan. We are Deadpan. Deadpan is the way.
Just saying that, there's a website, it's called storycasting.com. I don't know if you've been there. They take novels, and you know the gist of it is if you're the type of person that when you're reading a book or listening to an audiobook and you see it in your head as a film and see actors playing these parts, you can take any book and they've got a database of books, a database of actors and actresses, and you can cast the imaginary film with whoever you want. And they contacted me. They said they wanted to put Murder at Avedon Hill on there. And so people can go there and cast the film version, the imaginary film version of Murder at Avedon Hill with whoever they see in these roles, which is, you know, it's an addicting site if you're the type of person that likes casting movies yourself. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I could certainly see that being fun with Meh.
You're going, meh. Meh.
No, it's not M-E-H, right? Yeah, but you know, what's interesting, actually, there's a kind of a little circular connection here, because I actually learned about story casting through Dan Charette, who, if you recall, last Halloween,
yes,
actually, did you, that was probably, that was the first, right?
That was the first. Dan dressed as Aramis Cragen for Halloween. That's the first first time that I know of that anybody dressed up for Halloween as a character from Murder at Avedon Hill. So that was quite the experience. You know, you were Eva was live casting his Halloween party, and you pulled him into the camera when I was checking in, and I was like, "Oh, dude, I can't believe it."
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And just I'll tell the story, and I'll tell it in 30 seconds. You know, I was at Evo Terra's Halloween party, and I just happened. I know Dan Charette was there, and dressed, you know, monk robes and everything. And he said he was Aramis Cragen, and I saw, you know, they actually had the basically Ustream going, so people could kind of check in from afar. And PG checked in from afar, and I remember saying, "Don't leave yet. You got to see this." And then, you know, ran and grabbed Dan Charette, and he was Aramis Cragen, which was cool. And also, it was cool that he was there with Dan Firebend of the Love, Long, and Prosper podcast, who was there as Scary Perry Dawson from Sigler's book. So we had the two of them. But anyway, you know, enough about Scott Sigler. He gets enough press.
Yeah, Jesus, stunning.
No, just I kid Scott Sigler, but yeah. So and now let's talk about the reason why you're here, because there isn't a very exciting development for 2010 with Murder at Avedon Hill.
Absolutely. Dragon Moon Press picked it up actually beginning of 2009, and it's just taken this long to get in the schedule. But on May 15th, it hits. Hits Amazon. It might actually hit around the 10th, but we're using the 15th as the book launch and the Amazon rush to make sure that we don't have a Nina Kimberly incident. If you recall, when she did her book launch, Amazon had her book as Christiana's book as out of stock, even though it was there, just because their databases sometimes treat POD books incorrectly or just in a weird way. So giving it a few days to get it so we know that when we're actually trying to buy the book that it'll actually people will be able to buy it. So on the 15th, which is two Saturdays from now, depending on when you release your episode, we're going to be doing a live show on Stick'Em. Starting at noon Eastern, I'll be doing a reading and a short story from Tales of the Children, and then have some contests and different things based tied to the book release. And I'm gonna do a contest also through story casting. Anybody that has read the book and wants to try to cast the characters with actors, anybody that chooses an actor or actress that makes me say, "Wait, that's actually better than the person I chose," then I'll put their name in a hat and give away a mouse pad or a copy of the book or something. We'll figure it out.
Hi, this is Christopher Moore, world famous unknown author on Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep listening.
So yeah, so it's going to be fun. It's going to be an event then.
Yeah, we're going to try to have some fun with that.
And you know, of course, we've talked a little bit about, you and I have actually had a bunch of conversations about Tales of the Children, but I think that's, you know, since you brought it up, we should, well, I don't want to, take any of the glory away from your book release, because that is a very cool thing, and I do want to encourage everyone to go and check it out. I don't want to switch gears completely on, you know, your big publicity push here, but let's keep, you know, if there are more facts about the book that need to be shared, then by all means, you know.
If you haven't given the book a try, one of the things that we found, and one of the sort of the ideas that I'm pushing with people if they might be interested, is that one of the things we found with the podcast is that I got a lot of people that gave it a try because of the name of the book, and they thought it was, you know, either they thought it was a murder mystery and they didn't even notice that it, you know, they didn't read the you know, the blurb or whatever beforehand, and then they're like, oh, this is a fantasy novel, and they kept listening, or they saw that it was fantasy, but it was a murder mystery, you know, at its heart, and they gave it a try, and they actually liked it. So I'm trying to push it as, you know, a cross genre, and also that if people are, you know, if people have family or friends that have just been resistant to fantasy, but they, you know, they do like reading mysteries, then by all means, this could be a gateway drug for them to discover that fantasy actually has some good stuff. So, but give it a try. We've got, the podcast is, you know, will always be over at my site, which is pgoleyfield.com, and over at Podia Books. And, yeah, it's been rated very well on, Podia Books and over at iTunes. So, you know, if you want to try to squeeze it in the next couple weeks, or give it a part of it a listen, and you know, it's definitely worth reading.
And that's cool. I mean, that's cool also that you're going to go that route, that you'll keep the podcast out there even with your book in print. And is it the same cover we've seen, or do you have what's the artwork going to be like on the cover?
It's actually, yeah, there's a brand new cover. Alex White, who's the art director, I guess is his title, over at Dragon Moon Press. I worked with him, and he probably hates me now because I kept giving him suggestions and saying, I really don't think that works. And he kept, you know, doing new things, and we came up with something that I'm really proud of. I mean, it's the one thing about, you know, small presses is that a lot of times the covers may not meet people's expectations, and that can be a turnoff. And I certainly am one of those people. If I see a cover that looks like, you know, somebody drew for free and doesn't, you know, doesn't really look professional, then I don't really want to look further to see what the book's about. And I was very, you know, adamant about, you know, getting a good cover, and Dragon Moon's covers since Alex, got on board have been great, and I'm really proud of what we came up with.
You know, this has been a very popular podcast novel, and I know that you know, a lot of people will be more inclined to pick it up. And as you said, it's an unfortunate reality that a lot of, I'm sure there have been a lot of great books that have just been passed over because of a lousy cover. That's a wonderful thing. I do, you know, I will wish you, I guess, break a leg, I guess, would be the showbiz term, you know. So break lots of legs with the release of this book.
I was gonna say I might break some legs if people don't buy it, but
there you have it, from P.G. Holyfield himself.
We'll get some legs broken somehow. No. Right.
Buy my book or your legs get broken. Yes.
Hello, just letting you know that all of us pixies listen to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
That's right, all of the pixies love Jack Mangan, and Deadpan is the pixie listening way.
But, you know, and hopefully there certainly are people who aren't audiobook listeners, but who may, you know, so I'd certainly hope that you reach a whole new audience, and that the old audience kind of turns out as well. I think, you know, as I said, I do hope you break some legs with this.
Yeah, that's the one thing that we're trying, you know, it was a popular, you know, podcast novel. We had, I've had over, you know, how these counts are. You have no idea how many people actually listen to any of it. But I mean, the first episode has been downloaded over 20,000 times, you know, counting the Podia Books and my feed as well. And I mean, it definitely has been, like you said, it's been, the breakdown that I've been able to see with the people that have been listening, and this is all just really just conjecture, because you can't, you know, the only way you learn about who's listening is if they contact you, of course, so you don't really know. But just from anecdotal stuff, talking to people, it seems like I have had a higher female listenership than normal. You know, people that have found the book because it was, you know, the mystery tie-in has been high. So, you know, we have a chance of hitting some people that, you know, aren't just the normal, the fans that we all love that go out and buy the podcast novelist books when they come out in print. I'm hoping that we can, you know, kid some of these other people that may not have jumped into that, you know, side of things and have bought the print versions of these books. So that's part of why we're doing all the interviews, and because I've been away for a while as far as you know, the novel ended in 2009 or over a year ago now. So we're trying to just say, hey, we're still here, and hey, we got a book coming out.
Right. That is also pretty interesting. I think, you know, you had all those female listeners. It was probably for the, you know, your sultry voice. I think that's probably what drew them all in.
Obviously, that's it.
Right. And they were also impressed by the production values too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers, we talked briefly about the fact that, you know, this was a full cast audio drama.
Right.
Because of that, we had all of those of, you know, all the people in the voice cast, most of them anyway, had their own podcasts, and they could say, well, you know, I lent a voice to this novel if you want to give it a try. So, I mean, I had promotion, you know, out the gate that a lot of people didn't have at that time. A lot of people have started or completed by now, you know, the full cast method of presenting their podcast novels. So, but when I did it, really T was the only one with Billabo Battings that had gone this route. So when I was able to get people to lend their voices, that was a big, you know, big promotional thing right out the gate.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess you're right. But I mean, of course, and you know, I'm not being facetious. I think it was the story quality and it was a great production value. I'm saying that's what kept people coming back, because, you know, I mean, all the promotion in the world is not going to keep people interested if the book isn't a good thing.
Very true.
And now, of course, this has been your identity for in the podcast world for a while, and rightfully so. And of course, it has taken, as you said, it's taken a lot. I mean, being a meticulous, almost perfectionist yourself. I mean, obviously that's, it's been a, again, that's not a crack, but,
yes, I am meticulous, and some people would say slow, but I see it as just, yeah, the production stuff. I don't release something until I'm happy with it, which might be a lot longer than some people. So,
well, you know, that I think everybody has their own pace. So that's one of the nice things about podcasting is, you know, you can kind of set your own pace.
Right.
But so, well, I mean, what all that was leading to is, what can we look for in the future from PG Holyfield?
Well, we've got a great story by Jack Mangan that will be, no, I we do, but, in September of last year, I started a podcast anthology, a short story anthology called Tales of the Children, which is set in the land of Cairn, the setting where the novel takes place. One of the conceits in the novel and in the setting is that the gods, the immortal beings called the Children of Aj, they have the ability to enter the world as mortals, live mortal lives, so that they can, you know, direct events in the world and do what they do best, cause problems for people more than anything. And they, so I put the word out to people, and because, you know, I had some stories that I wanted to do, but I also wanted to get other people's takes on the setting. And in between September and the end of the year, I did eight live readings on Stick'Em. I wanted to get a little bit more into the video side of things. So I did live readings on Stick'Em of eight stories, and then I've released three so far in audio form. I took a break at the end of the year, and we're going to be starting back up pretty much right now, because I've got actually the first story that someone else has recorded, Dan... I don't know how to pronounce his last name yet. I think it's Absalonson, But it's Dan the Art Man, for anybody that knows him on Twitter. He wrote a short story, and I was talking to him about it, and he, you know, I said, I will eventually get, I like your story, eventually get to podcasted, but, and he was like, well, I've been trying to start my own podcast, fiction podcast, can I record it? And I was like, yeah, sure, that'll get it done faster, and if, you know, the production is, you know, top-notch, then we'll run it on my podcast. And he sent me his audio, and it sounds great, so I'm going to be running that, and I'm going to be doing one of the backlog of stories that I've done in video before the 15th. So I'm trying to, you know, inundate my feed with content before the 15th. And then after the book launch, I'll be starting the second season, I guess you would call it. We'll be starting with a story by Jack Mankin. So that'll be a lot of fun.
I just saw this little square run by holding an arrow getting chased by a big yellow duck. No, it wasn't a dragon. It looked like a duck. Either they're in the wrong cartridge, or I made a seriously wrong turn somewhere.
That's cool. That guy's a big. That guy's a hack. But
he's a douche. But
yeah.
Well, he wrote a good story, so I can't really, you know. I didn't want to. I was just like, well, it's gonna, you know, if it sucks, then I can just tell him to go away. But it turned out to be good.
Yeah, well, you know, the quality of the story, that's also going to be that's very subjective too. But you know, I will say that I am, rather than speak about myself in third person, insulting third person, in fact, popular writing style. I do appreciate the invite to play in this world, and I did have a lot of fun, even breaking your requirements. So it was a lot of fun, and I appreciate the
Well, you're a man after my own heart, because word count means nothing to me, and I go beyond whatever word count anybody has ever asked for. And and it wasn't your fault, because I didn't, like, you know, say it was in stone, but you gave me a story that it was much, much more high magic, you know, much more, you know, fantastical than my normal stories in this world. And, you know, that just made me realize, you know, this isn't, you know, canon. This is, you know, good stories and set in this world. And, you know, so I was able to actually understand that letting go and having fun with us is the way to go. And you know, it helped that, you know, I had a great story by you to give me that impetus. So that was good.
Oh, shucks. Thanks.
Shucks.
But turning this back around to you, you know, since I didn't have you come on my show to talk about me.
this is a promotion for a future podcast episode that I'll be releasing. And you know, your fans may not know me, so they'll come listen to a story that you wrote.
Well, you know, all right, point taken. But I would say also...
How long have they been waiting for Spherical Tomy 2?
So what I was going to say is...
No, I'm just saying, I can make that joke because I've had the questions from May of last year. So when's the sequel coming out? Like, let me edit this one and get it ready for publication. Then we can talk about the sequel. Thank you very much.
Right. And actually, I know some of that conversation, I guess, I was privy to, because as we were talking about how to fit the story into your world, and some of the things that you said, like, no, don't do that, because that's going to be in a future volume that I may write someday. So I got an inside track on that, I guess. But I do want to pay you this compliment, damn it, and then we can talk about your... is that I think the fact that this story wasn't a great, or wasn't a perfect fit, like, you're right, it was, and absolutely would not fit in the time of the actual core novel. It wouldn't fit at all. But I think that should, you know, your world was so well developed that you know, I get the impression that this does fit on Cairn, just nowhere near the Murder at Avedon Hill timeline. Nowhere near.
Right. Absolutely. That was a realization that I had, that I could actually use any type of story, because the early, you know, the historical timeline, the early times the gods could actually enter the world without, you know, pretty much on a whim, like, you know, the Greek gods and Clash of the Titans, you know, they would just show up and cause all sorts of havoc. And because of the problems that they did cause, and they almost destroy the world at one point, their father, you know, the creator god, put these constraints on them. And so in later history, they could still enter the world, but they would be born as mortals, and they would have no recollection of their true nature unless something happens during their mortal life that would allow them to realize, you know, who they actually are. But being able to set your story and further back in the past sort of makes everything fit as far as the plot and the magic, the level of magic that's in the story that really works. So.
Well, cool. Well, and I think, like I said, that shows just how well developed the world was, and it wasn't, you weren't just kind of hacking it away at, you know, your cheesy contrived fantasy idea. I mean, this was a very well developed world, and again, you know, you didn't really, for people, to be honest, I really don't consume a whole lot of fantasy because I'm kind of tired of all the cliches, and I would say that they're absolutely not present at all in this book, in this world. And again, you know, with all the history and everything, it's just, it's a very strong combination of favorable elements. So there
you
go.
Thank you.
And it was fun, you know, and for me personally, getting to play and write a short story, one of the tales of the children, that's also not something that I write a whole lot. I mean, I have a strong, you know, my childhood and my background has a lot of fantasy in it, but I don't really write much fantasy at all, ever. So it was fun. So I'm indebted to you, sir. It's a great world, and it's a great opportunity.
Thank you very much.
And you know what? We should actually, there are two things we should do before we wrap up here. We should talk about your, we alluded to it. So what is, I mean, Tales of the Children is great and all, but that's not directly from the mind of from the brilliant mind of P.G. Holyfield. So what can we look forward to directly from your creative outlet, either on Cairn or off Cairn?
Well, of Tales of the Children, I've done one short story that was mine. I've got two more that'll be coming out. You know, after book launch, when I'm you know, able to really concentrate back on that podcast. And then I'm working on the sequel to Murder at Abaddon Hill, which is, you know, a direct sequel, meaning that it's the same two main characters, but, you know, about 3 months down the line. So I've got that. And then the other project that I'm working on with Patrick McLean, we did a very short four-episode comedic story called Flinchy and the Mexican Show Truck, and we've been trying to get back to do season two of that, and we will, you know, hopefully be able to do that once the book is launched and can concentrate on that story, which is a lot of fun. And then more just in the last month, I've become obsessed with an idea that I had, and I've spent like $100 on Amazon buying books from a particular period in English history, because I want to do an alternate history type thing, basically a you know, what if scenario where there's you know, if there were demons and other supernatural elements during a particular period in English history, which I won't go into now because it's way too early to even broach the subject. But that's sort of been my, whenever I have any creative energy, I'm reading about that because I've got ideas for a story. So we'll see if that ever pans out. But more importantly, the sequel will trying to get it done before the end of the year so I can start podcasting that and you know, seeing if Dragon Moon wants to look at that as well.
Excellent. Yeah. So you're going to be a little busy.
Yeah. Always.
That's a good way to be, though.
Never enough hours in the day for all the stuff we want to do. I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, you know, right. For I think, especially, you know, when you have creative stuff you want to do, I mean, that's the type of thing where you're always making time for it. It's never like, you know, it's something you have to carve out. So I certainly, you know, I know how that goes. And
right.
And, you know, I hope, you know, I do wish you the best. I hope you just keep on breaking legs, and I hope, I hope that you're, you know, oh, and I guess it's still fairly close enough. So I'll also wish you a happy birthday.
Ah, well, thank you, sir.
it's a couple of weeks ago now, but you know, what the hell? You know, like I said, and as I said on my, when I sent you the Facebook happy birthday, I think, 2010 will be the year, will be the Holyfield year.
Year of Holyfield. That's what we're going for right now.
That's right. The last year of Holyfield ended up with, you know, Mike Tyson biting ears and all, and you know, we don't have to revisit that.
No, no ears, legs, no ears.
Right. Broken legs, no ears. All right, man. Well, thank you very much for coming on Deadpan and talking. We've talked for a long time, but I think I've not been bored for 1 minute.
Well, so, thank you for the opportunity. I didn't even have to go through what's in my refrigerator or anything. So, you know,
I feel pretty good. We got time.
I can tell you right now, there's a bunch of Gatorade. There's a pizza. Let's see. I did some pancakes and bacon this morning, so that's in there. That's pretty much it. Just the staples. No beer. I drank the last beer the other night, so I got to go get some beer. So well, that's my fridge.
You have the other necessary food groups, as in, you know, pancakes and bacon. So, you're set.
Yeah. And I got the scotch. I got the scotch in the cupboard, so we've got that covered. So,
right. So yeah, you have your emergency provisions are there. All right. Well, thank you again for coming on. Thank you for coming on, PG.
Hey everyone, this is Dan Charette, author of Lilith's Love, and host of the Out of the Coffin podcast, and you are listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan podcast. Deadpan is the motherfucking way. How's that? Sweet? Laters.
Why, sure! Why, climb sure. Into my spoon! Into my spoon! Into my spoon!
So are you willing to read some comments if I throw them to you in Skype?
Absolutely. I will not know context in the least because I don't know... I used to follow your comments, which, you know, were hundreds for each podcast, and I understood about 1/100th of what was going on, so the context won't be here, but I'll be happy to read whatever you throw me.
All right, cool. And, you know, usually, even for me and for the people who've said this stuff, you know, the context is lost, you know, because it's just, it's a random comment they made last week, so... all right, well, I'll just throw five at you. So you can run through five comments from random comments from the comments page on my site. So here you go. Here's one.
Vanamond says, the Scooby Gang never looked so cool.
All right. Very, very nicely done. Very well done. All right, you know, actually, let's see, maybe we can have, actually, I was going to say we can have Aramis Cragen read this, but, you know, Aramis, he basically sounds like you, just a little bit more soft-spoken, but maybe he can read this one.
Yeah, I can do him. Retro says, Bunny is married to Joe Satriani? Does he give a deadpan discount?
Actually, you know, that was pretty good. That was, that was excellent.
I am a pro.
That's true. Yes. You know, this is not amateur hour here. So, you know, no bumping into the microphone or anything. All right. Here's number three of five, or really three of four, because the fifth will be the first of the week. But here's number three.
Okay. I don't know if it's Legion or Lejean from Chandler says... JRM. Yeah, the whole An Evening with Kevin Smith is pretty funny, especially the Prince world. That tops Superman by just a hair.
Nicely done. That was not Aaron. That was actually P.G. Holyfield as P.G. Holyfield. And the fourth.
The Energizer Bunny says, Okay, that's all the silliness I can handle today. Later, panites. And I read that first as later panties, but I saw what it was right at the end there.
Oh, it's a shame. I wish you had you'd not caught that.
Later panties.
And just let me also say thank you very much for indulging me here with this.
I don't mind.
But here goes the final.
The final. Yeah, I feel like I'm doing a top 10 on Letterman.
That's right, Buttafuoco.
And the number one, yeah, Buttafuoco.
All right, the final is actually the first comment of the week, so I'll send that over to you, the very last one from P.G. Holyfield.
Nomad Scry says, when you're 164, I'll be the one.
And
when you're 164, I'll be... I don't know what that means, so...
well, that's the name of the episode. Is when
that's what I was about to say. Is that the number of the episode? So
yeah, and actually, I named the episode "When I'm 164."
Ah, for the Beatles song.
That's right. Yes, and that was all excellently done. So thank you very much, P.G. Holyfield, for doing wonderful readings of
the dry read of Jack Mangan's comments.
That's right, the greasy comments, or as we call them around here, and you know. We won't even get into why, but we call them the greasy nipples around here. So, yes, Deadpan's become a very weird and fun thing. But it's thank you for joining and adding to the weird and to the fun.
You are very welcome.
Before this microphone, I don't know what I'm doing. Show the world audacity, leave radio in ruins. I'm the future of audio, radio is the past. I tell people what I do, say what the hell's a podcast. Just make sure that you download my latest episode. Jack Mangan's Deadpan is away, tell me are you listening? Podcast killed the radio star, first podcaster spoke. I just hope that this pays off, cause I'm still fucking broke. Gotta make some money soon, so many bills to pay. Well, if this doesn't pay off, maybe I can be a DJ. Are you listening to what I say? Deadpan's a motherfucking way. Last year, but that you danced to me, are you listening? About my life, drag you into my boredom. You got something or nothing to say, go ahead, record one. Sit before your microphone, say hello to your new master. Say goodbye to your free time, now you're a podcaster. Are you listening to what I say? Deadpan's a motherfucking way. Last year, but that you dance to me, are you listening? Just make sure that you download my latest episode. Jack Mangan's Deadpan is the way to me, are you listening? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you again, Lee, on the bass. All right, and that was our four-song set, so thank you. And thanks for playing along, and thanks for just being cool. And there'll be more speeches and shit when we record the live deadpan. So, but I think now for disaster, right? Actually, I have faith in Dan. I just don't know if I'm up for this. Now, if this goes horribly wrong, it's not Dan. Actually, wait, I'm going to tune down even so it'll get...